while driving.
Hello, everyone. Marty Smith here. Welcome to Four Please, Now Driving, the official Masters podcast, our very first foray into the podcasting world from the Masters Tournament at Augusta National Golf Club. We'll be producing a podcast every single day from the tournament, starting on Monday, April 8th, all the way through someone winning a green jacket on April 14th. We will push those out every evening around 9 o'clock or so, so that you guys can have a very intimate, very unique inside immersion to the Masters Tournament, unlike you've ever had before. And I get the great blessing of being the person to bring you that podcast. I'm honored and humbled beyond belief to have this opportunity. And it's going to be a unique experience. We will each day interview a couple of celebrities from the world of sports and entertainment about their experience during the tournament. And one thing that we want to do is find out what it's like the first time you have the opportunity to walk in the gates at Augusta National Golf Club, what it's like to be a patron. I remember interviewing Tiger Woods before last year's Masters Tournament and asking him what it was like the first time he won the tournament.
That night, I ended up going to sleep with it as my blanket. I cuddled up next to it, and I was holding it like a little blankie. That's how much it meant to me. I mean, it really did, to win the Masters and to do it there and to do it, you know, with my dad still alive. That was awesome.
I remember 2005 when he hit that chip on 16.
Well, here it comes. Oh, my goodness. In your life, have you seen anything like that?
That was a shot heard round the world. That was a golf shot that prompted today's stars to chase the game. I know that because Tony Finau told me that himself. And you talk about tremendous Masters performances. What about what Finau did last year? He had the wonderful moment of hitting a hole-in-one during the par 3 contest on Wednesday, and then celebrating by backpedaling down the fairway, blowing his ankle apart, popping it back in place, and then having to completely change his swing over the next 4 days. He had spent his entire life in Utah dreaming about the opportunity to play in the Masters. On the eve of that opportunity, on the eve of realizing a childhood dream, and it may be dashed. And yet he comes out, shoots a 68 on Thursday in a tremendous performance on one leg, and ultimately ties for 10th overall in his first Masters.
This is a moment I dreamed of my whole life. To see the possibility of it slipping away and when I feel ready to compete and play against the best players in the world is tough. When they told me I was clear to go, as long as I felt okay, I knew I was going to play.
I can't wait to sit down with your favorite athletes, musicians, actors, and learn about their first experience at Augusta National. And not just those who've only experienced it once or a handful of times. Every single time you go, it's a spiritual moment, including those folks who've done it for quite literally half their lives. I had the great opportunity to catch up with legendary CBS broadcaster Jim Nantz, whom most of us consider to be the voice of the Masters Tournament, about his perspective on these hallowed grounds.
I've been here so many years now, Marty, that I just have certain personal rituals and places and moments that flood the mind with great warm feelings. It's still hard for me to get over the fact, as time marches on, that I was actually there broadcasting Jack Nicklaus's sixth green jacket. It just, now that I'm 59, to know that I was in my mid-20s back then, and getting back to one of your earlier points, that Frank Cherkinian entrusted me to be on that broadcast. I was just a kid was 3.5 years removed from graduating from college. And I had to put some captions together for one of the most significant events in the history of the game, maybe the most important or best tournament of all time. And, you know, Jack, as you'll recall, very nearly knocked it in off the tee at 16. And it came trickling off the hill, the slope just beyond flag high, and it looked like it was going to go into the hole. And I could still just being frozen at the moment. What do you say? I said nothing, which was the right play. Frank had given me a long soliloquy about, make sure you remember, silence is a sword. He called it a weapon. He thought it would bring strength to a broadcaster's credibility if you were spare and you had pauses and layouts during stretches that where the action was falling in your hands. There weren't cutarounds to other holes. He thought people would hang on more to what you were saying if you spoke not only slowly but sparingly. And don't be afraid to ever say nothing. So I like to go out to 16 and revisit that important moment in time, in a personal important moment in time. I just wanted an 86 to be accepted so that I could come back and do it again in 1987. You know, I thought I might be one and done. Fortunately, they've invited me back 30-some-odd years again and again, and I love that feeling like you're dropped out of the world when you're on the grounds there. And Tuesday, Wednesday for me of Masters Week is a wonderful time. Now, I'm not going to kid you, especially as I get older. I am almost flat on my back, tired. I'm coming off the NCAA basketball tournament, and I've called, in this case, it'll be 15 games now in the last 22 days, and that includes the championship game, but it's the early round action where you're calling six games in 48 hours and all the preparation that goes into all of this, and it's exhausting. Now, you get to Augusta, and it's a swish pan mentally for you. You have to be transitioning and letting go of one shining moment and all that stuff that came with this basketball festival, because this week is too important. It's my best and biggest and favorite and, again, most important week of the year. So Tuesday and Wednesday, I'm kind of getting the cobwebs out, and I like to walk around and see people, see the players that are in the field, try to pick up some last-second information. You know, no cameras rolling with me, no note and pen in hand. I just catalog it in my brain. I like to walk down to Amen Corner every year on Wednesday once the par three tournament commences and the big course is closed. I like to go down to Amen Corner and walk across the Hogan and Nelson bridges and say a prayer of thanks on the 12th green. I've done that every year. So those are important times for me, and I feel a great sense of gratitude in my heart for being able to be there, to be able to connect my youth with the present and to see the dream come true. And I never want to, like, I never will take any of that for granted. So 12 and 13 is a place where I really sense it and feel it. It's just become a ritual for me. And this prayerful introspection and appreciation, it carries with me, I carry it with me the rest of the week.
For someone who may have never walked those grounds the way that you've been blessed to, how would you describe what they might experience?
Well, for people that go to the Masters for the first time, or sometimes I hear from people that are about to go play Augusta for the first time, and they want to talk about, well, what's it going to be like? You try to tell them. And, of course, the superlatives after a while to describe it, you run out of them. You can't come up with enough to do justice to it. But you never worry that you're delivering expectations that cannot be met. And I've never failed to hear anyone ever come back to me and say, you know, I was so excited about going to the Masters the first time, but, you know, after the all the build-up and everything, it was okay. It wasn't quite as great as everybody said, which happens in most things that get hyped right. or get built up. You know, you can never meet that level of expectation. But with the Masters, you can't. You can go to the – you can reach for the sky and up you know, as high as you want. People are still going to – like, everything is going to be met. Everybody's going to reach that level of greatness that you've described. I don't know many things in the world today that deliver every single time as much as the Masters experience for people.
That's just a brief snippet of a lengthy, wide-ranging conversation with Jim Nantz. And you guys will hear the entire conversation next week when we're live from the grounds at Augusta all week long with the Four Please Now Driving Masters podcast. And I can't wait for you guys to hear that conversation with Jim. He was nostalgic. He was emotional and so introspective about a one-of-a-kind career that has been immersed in the Masters tournament for more than 30 years. And I personally cannot accurately, fully articulate what it's like to be there. I know because I remember my first time vividly. It's a spiritual connection with the grounds. It was the 2015 Masters Tournament. I went with my wife's uncle, Joe Kokoza. I had the great opportunity to take him to the Masters. He's the most voracious golf consumer I know. And I know a lot of guys who love the game. Some of my best friends love the game. And I remember calling him to tell him that I got us passes on a Friday to the Masters. It took him 10 seconds to say anything. And when he finally talked, all he could say is that he was speechless. So he flies to Charlotte, and we go down to Augusta. And we walked in there, and the vividness of the colors, the greens and the pinks and the whites, is so striking. I had always viewed the Masters through that foggy film strip of wonder. I had watched the tournament my whole life with my father. And seeing those great moments throughout history with my dad. And I was thinking about him as I entered those gates and walked around with Uncle Joe. And I can remember the look on Uncle Joe's face as we followed Tiger. And I remember being on 9 as Tiger chipped up there. And I saw the most amazing moment at the 9th green that really summed up the Masters tournament for me. There's a very unique selflessness there. And Uncle Joe and I were standing at the 9th green waiting on Tiger to chip up to the green and finish out the hole. And we were going to stay because Jordan Spieth was playing right behind him. And there were a lot of people who had the same philosophy we did. It was packed at the 9th green. We were probably 7 rows deep of people off the green. So we're standing there, and there is a pair of older ladies who had their chairs parked there. They were probably 3 or 4 rows back from the green with their chairs, and they got up to go to the concession area. And these other guys got up, and they left. They took their chairs with them. They were obviously following Tiger. They take their chairs with them, and there were these 2 open spots right beside the green. And I saw other patrons take their chairs and move their chairs to the front of the green. These ladies weren't even there. These folks take their chairs and move them to the edge of the green. And when those ladies came back, they were kind of shocked. Like, wait a minute, who moved our chairs? And a gentleman walked over, took the ladies by the arm, and walked them to their chairs, which were now seated beside the green. It was a wonderful moment to see, and it led me to this philosophy. There really is a unique selflessness there. If you see trash on the ground, you pick up the trash, and you put the trash in the bin because of the respect for the grounds and the respect for the event. You don't have your cell phone, which is beautiful. It's the one place on the planet Earth where you aren't looking at the world through the lens of an iPhone. you actually experience the immersive wonder of being there. Your feet are planted in the moment. We don't do that very often anymore. And you have to do that at Augusta National. Not only because you don't have your phone, but because the respect that lives in the air there is palpable. One of my sweetest memories is as the day faded on towards sunset. And I want to read quickly an excerpt of a piece that I wrote on ESPN.com after the day I'm detailing for you. I wanted to put it on paper because it felt so beautiful. Uncle Joe has spent his entire life adoring the Masters and adoring Augusta National. And one thing that he desperately wanted to do was see every hole with his own eyes. He wanted to walk those grounds that the greats of all time had walked. And he looked at me and said, "Can we please go for a walk?" And I said, "Sure, man, this is your day. I want you to do everything that you want to do because we're never coming back here again." This was before I had the great blessing of covering the tournament for ESPN. One of the greatest blessings of my professional life is being able to cover the Masters Tournament. I didn't think I'd ever get there. And so I said to him, "Let's do what you want to do." So I want to read this to you guys quickly because it really sums up that moment and the moment that is the Masters. "Before we departed, Joe wanted to walk the holes we had not yet seen. The grounds crews were already out, walking shoulder to shoulder like a search party looking for divots. They probably wondered why we were there, walking, all alone. Many of them said hello to us with a smile. As we walked, the breeze picked up quite a bit. It was 6:30 p.m. Suddenly, real time, real life had that late afternoon six beers fogginess about it. It looked like a dream. As the evening sun eased west towards dusk, and the clean breeze rushed through the tops of these trees, the magic of the myth pierced me. Directly between the first and ninth fairways is a 200 or so yard strip of pine needles garnishing a row of thick Georgia pines that reach towards the heavens. These trees have seen some things. It was quiet. From over the hill there was a roar of applause in the distance. I shivered a bit. Cold chills in 70-degree weather. It felt spiritual, like there was no one there but Joe, me, and the ghosts." That really sums it up for me. You can feel the ghosts. One of the most special moments I've ever had professionally was last year. It was Sunday, and I had been cleared from post-tournament work. It was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was told by my bosses at ESPN that I was done for the day and done for the tournament. I could go home if I wished. I called my wife and I said, "I'm going to be home a little earlier than I thought, but before I come home, I need a moment." I went to the concession stand in a full suit. I bought 2 beers. And I walked from the first fairway all the way to Amen Corner holding those 2 beers. And I got to Amen Corner and I sat down by myself. And I had those 2 beers. And one of those beers was for me. And one of those beers was for my dad. And I'll never forget that moment. This tournament is very special to me. I'm very new to it. But it is so important to me. And I hope you guys will go along on this ride with us each day from the tournament. The interviews are going to be insightful. And we hope to bring you a side of the Masters you've never experienced before. So thank you. We hope you enjoy it. This is Four Please, now driving the official Masters podcast. We'll chat with you as the week progresses.